A new national school safety organization will launch soon in Missouri. John McDonald will be the chief operating officer of the Council for School Safety Leadership. He is known nationally for leading the security team at Jefferson County Schools in Colorado, including Columbine High School, where two shooters opened fire in 1999, killing 12 students and one teacher. John, thank you so much for joining us today on Show Me Today. Talk to me about what attracted you to this new role.
Sure. Well, thanks for the opportunity to talk. What brought me to Missouri was an opportunity to help develop something I think that's going to be a game changer nationally in school safety. And it starts here in Missouri, and the opportunity to work with the Missouri School Board Association, who has been a leader in the world of school safety for many, many years. I had the opportunity to meet Melissa Randall, the executive director, and she shared a vision with me about what could be. And that included really building a network of school safety professionals around the country and learning the lessons of past tragedies and building programming around prevention, preparedness, response, and recovery. And Missouri benefits from that in every single school. And it's all in combination of work with, private public sector agencies, the Center for Educational Safety that's done such great work for so many years, and their great work will continue. This also allows us to build a critical incident response team that'll be able to work throughout Missouri when schools have need for support, and it'll also be available for school districts around the country that don't understand how to operate, have never been through a critical incident, and we have the capacity to bring those lessons learned and the experience from so many that have gone through this in the past. And Missouri is really becoming the catalyst for operational leadership and school safety around the country, and that's pretty exciting.
How long did you serve in that role as in charge of security for Jefferson County Public Schools?
For the past 14 years, I've been the executive director of school safety for Jeffco Schools, which is a district of 86,000 students and 14,000 employees. My association with Columbine has gone back all the way prior to the tragedy in 1999. My niece was actually a student during the tragedy and was trapped in one of the classrooms. And so I started my career as a police officer in Colorado, and I just left law enforcement when the tragedy at Columbine happened. And 2 years later, I was tapped to build the school safety program and become the architect of the post-tragedy safety, security, and emergency management program, because Columbine struggled for a decade to try and find a pathway to recovery. And the school district, 10 years following the tragedy, was still traumatized. The trauma that you experience following a tragedy like that just doesn't go away overnight. And it took us years to recover. I was on the job a year, just over a year, when we had another school shooting just down the block from Columbine High School, one of our middle schools. And we just trained that school 3 weeks earlier. We had just talked to them about what it would be like, what they'd hear, what they'd see, what they'd feel. And we saw some remarkable courage that day. Our teachers actually tackled, subdued, fought with, disarmed the suspect, and tied him up and had him ready for transport when law enforcement arrived. And we realized that we could really make a difference in mindset. We could teach our students and staff how to prepare and how to respond. We don't have to be emergency scared. We can be emergency prepared. But you really have to have an open, honest conversation with kids. And in the aftermath of that shooting, that was the first shooting I led the response to, and I've responded and supported school districts in 5 other shootings since that first one. But kids have an expectation that, you know, I want to feel safe when I go to school, and I expect that you're going to teach me those things that are going to help keep me safe. And if we're not afraid to talk to our kids about, you know, what do you do when you're on fire, why are we so afraid to have the conversation about what do you do when you're under fire? And we have to be willing to have that conversation. Adults struggle with it, but kids talk about it. And they want to know what the strategies are. They want to know the purpose. They want to know that the adults have a plan to keep them safe. And I think we owe that not only to our students of today, but we owe that to every student around the country that's ever become a victim or been murdered in the senseless act of school violence in the last 25 years. So, you know, we're in the middle of a, well, at the end of a pandemic. And I can't help but think that as a nation, if we'd spent some time and energy, maybe the same time and energy over the last 25 years dealing with the pandemic of school violence, just like we have in the pandemic of COVID, we would have whooped this thing. We would have had some answers. And the answers are not easy, but they are there. And that's the purpose of bringing this new organization together and leadership from around the country together to have a really direct, open, honest, hard conversations about what are we going to do to fix this, and how do we prevent it, how do we prepare for it, how do we respond to it, and how do we recover from it with fidelity? Because that's the only way I believe you can build trust with your parents and your kids and your staff and your community. And all of that's absolutely essential and critical.
You said the answers are there. What are the answers?
And it depends on what area you want to talk about, but in terms of prevention, you know, we have so many threats of our time that are occurring right now. Online bullying, sexting, drugs, alcohol, social media issues, suicidal ideation, homicidal ideation, attack behavior, fascination with weapons, eating disorders. I mean, kids are dealing with all of this stuff. So mental health is a big component of it, but mental health isn't the only piece of it. But I would say this, that somewhere along the line, the thrill of the thought has become thrill of the kill for too many. And we have to build a culture of trust where our kids trust us enough to come tell us about the things that are happening in their school, within their student community, because students will know before an adult ever will when there's a threat in the school. They hear it, they whisper about it, they talk about it. The rumor mills occur, they're texting, and it's on social media. If we build a culture of trust, our kids will come forward and they'll tell us what they've heard, what they know. And it's important that we have the conversation that telling is not snitching. We snitch to, you know, get someone in trouble for, you know, something silly. We tell to get someone help. And we have to be our brother's keeper, our sister's keeper. We have to be a good citizen in the school environment. And by doing that, we're creating a network of information where we can intervene at the earliest possible opportunity. So when someone's just thinking about it, or someone's just initially made that first threat, that we're stopping it. And it's important that we get in front of it, because if we don't address it, we normalize it. Just like bullying. If you see bullying in the school and you're a teacher and you walk by and you don't address it, what have you said to the bully and the victim? You've just said that this is normal behavior, it's okay. And it's not. So we have to address it. So providing crisis prevention, intervention techniques, de-escalation strategies for threat assessment, identification of students engaging in attack behavior very early on, it's proven to work. And we have great opportunity to help build systems that prevent it from ever occurring. And make no mistake, schools all over Missouri and all over the country have stopped a lot of problems early on. And we've got to build systems and structures, though, that stop the problems all the time. And how do you do that? It's hard work, and it requires significant investment of time, investment of people, some investment of funding, for sure, especially in training. And I think all of that then builds the climate and culture. It's a climate culture of safety, and that's absolutely essential. But that starts with school boards. It starts with superintendents. It starts with teachers and parents and the students themselves, making sure that everybody's buying in to that belief that we are going to be that safe school community, and this is our safe place to be.
We are, I think the proposal from the legislature this year would be to give about $1 million towards school safety efforts here in Missouri, mm-hmm. which is more than we've gotten in the past. For a long time, it's been $300,000. I think even 1 year it was zero. So it sounds like we're making progress, although, you know, the federal cash flow this year is much different from when it was prior to this year. And so, you know, I guess we'll wait and see what happens in terms of future funding for school safety. But what I'm getting at is when it comes to funding different things, different techniques to help keep kids safe in school, does it have to be like a fortress, basically? I mean, are there old school ways? Are there a mix of higher tech ways that schools can do now that maybe don't necessarily cost as much as they maybe think it would?
That's a great question. It doesn't cost a single dollar to keep a door locked and not prop it. And we've seen time and time again where doors are propped, and that's how a shooter has gotten in the building. So it costs $0 to fix that. We know from an algorithm study that was done just a couple of years ago that 76% of all intruders come in the front door. Well, if you're an elementary or middle school, you can easily keep your front door locked and put in a buzzer security system or a video doorbell. If you're a high school, if you have an open campus environment, it's a little more difficult, but that's where, you know, most high schools have a campus security person that can be the eyes and ears at the door. So there are things that we can do that don't have a significant investment. There are those things that frankly need some investment. If your school district doesn't have air conditioning because the building's 60 years old, which is pretty common around the country, then that could mean, you know, a significant investment to bring that up to a level where you can be operational in those hot days without leaving your doors wide open. But there's a lot of things that we can do in building a climate and culture that don't require a capital expenditure. There are some things that are just, frankly, in the high-tech world going to require some investment. It's not terribly expensive to add a panic button in a school that sends a signal immediately to the police department or sheriff's office saying, come help. That's pretty reasonable. More expensive would be adding cameras, and that could be an important component for schools. I'm a fan of cameras. It tells the story. It doesn't stop the threat, but it certainly allows you to respond with fidelity, and you can actually have a picture of the suspect before you get on scene, and you know who you're looking for. Those are pretty good opportunities. We just saw a situation in Uvalde where, you know, the story's changed so much it's hard to understand or know what happened. But one report is that it took them 77 minutes to find a key. Well, you can easily stage a key for law enforcement in a specialized lockbox that only law enforcement has access to, so they can get keys to any classroom immediately. That doesn't cost a lot of money. There's a lot of stuff that we can do that we'll be working with schools on to share a menu of resources at no cost and low cost, medium and high cost that they can choose from that fits their environment, because there's not a school out there in our community that's the same. And School districts in rural Missouri have very different needs than suburban or urban Missouri. And we have to recognize that. But at the same time, there's some really core things that everybody needs. And I think that's one of the things I'm looking forward to helping design, is that menu of options where here's 20 things you can do for less than $1,000 that help change your environment. Because you're absolutely right. Some people say we need a fortress. Others say we need to have an open school environment that's welcoming. Well, I think you can have a balance between a secure school environment that's still welcoming. The welcoming part is what our people provide each and every day. And they're that kind, care, and trusted adult that we want in schools. But it requires that we look at the world a little differently, because it's a pretty uncertain world right now. The world's not scary, but it is uncertain. And that requires that we're locking doors. That requires that we have the ability to lock down fast if we need to, that we give kids options to evacuate if they need to, that we have relevant conversations about the threats of our time, whether it's an attacker or whether it's, a suicidal ideation occurring, someone in the school. How do we engage early, and how do we put safety plans in place that keep that student and everybody around them safe? And how do we get everybody back to the business of learning as fast as possible? So if we do all of that, and that's what schools are balancing all of this each and every day already, then we just become more successful at what we do, more safe at what we're doing. And I think that's the opportunity for the two to merge.
John McDonald, the soon-to-be chief operating officer of the newly formed Council for School Safety Leadership, joined Show Me today. The new National School Safety Organization will launch soon in Missouri. It is part of the Missouri School Boards Association. I'm curious, what's the most difficult challenge in this whole school safety conversation, in your opinion? Is it the money? Is it the guns conversation? Is it a mindset? What do you think it is?
I think the fight that we face each and every day in schools, in the world of school safety, is apathy and also a willingness to have a mindset that it can't happen here, can happen somewhere any given day. And we have to be aware of that, well, not scared of that. And that's the challenge for us. And, the issue of guns, that's a societal issue. In all candor, we are a gun culture. I don't know how you're going to fix that, change that. I had the Japanese government a few years ago send a contingent to spend a week with us because they were experiencing mass stabbings in Japan at schools. They're a knife culture. They wanted to see what we were doing from an active shooter lens to see if they could take those strategies back to their country and use them for strategies for mass attackers. I think the conversation we have to have is, what is driving this desire to hurt people? What's driving the desire to kill? And if we're not willing to have that conversation, and that's a hard conversation to have, because I don't think there's any easy fix to it. But there's also a time and a place to have the conversation about how do you keep your guns safe so that they're either not being stolen or young people don't have immediate access to weapons that they shouldn't have. Communities have to decide for themselves where their priorities are. And every community is different. And there's different needs and different issues. There's just not a one-size-fits-all solution or strategy for this. And I think everybody is trying to fit that round peg in a square hole, and it just doesn't work. And a lot of frustration comes from that, because at the end of the day, when we're talking about school violence, all we see is our most precious resource, our most innocent getting hurt here. And that's just not okay. How do you fix that? And what can we do? Well, schools have to be prepared for an insider threat and an outsider threat. And the strategies and the solutions for those two issues are very different. But there is some consistency with each of them also. We've got to have those conversations. And here's the thing. Educators are not a paramilitary organization. I don't want to ask our educators to become warriors. The reason they went into education is to teach kids. And bless them for what they do, because it's an incredible amount of patience. And you're also the people that think the best of our kids. And they have the greatest hope for our kids. And they're spending the time with them learning, teaching, and educating. And we need that. So the conversation about arming teachers, let your teachers teach. Now, there's a time and a place for maybe armed teachers in rural environments when you're 20 minutes from success, meaning your law enforcement response time is just not going to get to you very quickly. Well, maybe you need to have a different conversation. But if you really believe in the school safety need and the school security need, well, hire a professional to be that professional security presence, whether it's a school resource officer, whether it's a highly trained, armed security person that is trained by your local law enforcement agency, whatever that is. Let's not put the onus on our teachers to do more than they're already doing, because we want them to focus on teaching kids.
With the threats facing our schools, is there much information out there about threats in the rural part of the states versus urban and suburban? Is there any information like that?
Are you talking about nationally or
yes,
in the state of Missouri?
Well, if you have both, that's great. I was thinking nationally, but whatever you have.
Yeah, it's really a challenge to get any sort of statistics like that. There is a group out of D.C. that is trying to capture that data, looking at targeted school violence successes and also looking at the world through early identification that's actually worked. But it requires schools to report that. And school districts around the country have been reluctant to report threats to their community and certainly don't want to report it to a database unless they're anonymous, because so many school districts are afraid of how they're going to be viewed. They're afraid that parents will be upset. They're afraid that, the pressure that it puts on the schools themselves, when information comes out that a threat was happening, they just don't like to talk about it. So there is no real data out there nationwide that I've ever heard of or seen that has said, here are the numbers. Now, if you're just to extrapolate in terms of populations, one would say you're going to have fewer threats with a smaller population. So rural districts would have fewer threats than urban or suburban districts. However, any threat could be the worst threat, and you just don't know what you're stopping as you start working it. And by its mere nature, the fact that you prevented something, means the community will typically never know what occurred. They may get whispers of it. They may get rumors. Or sometimes in smaller communities, the information gets out there a lot faster than it does in larger communities, just because the community is so much more tight-knit. And all of that has ramifications in terms of how the school operates in the following days and weeks and the messaging that they have to do. But there's just no data source out there. So it's difficult to say. I mean, I can just give you an example from my school district in Colorado. This school year, we did 1,258 threat assessments on students engaging in attack behavior. Now, I'm pretty open about what we saw, what we went through, but most districts around the country will never give you those numbers.
Okay. Before we wrap this up, is there anything else that you think that we need to hit on that you think is important to our Show Me Today audience? Do you have a message to give, like one message that you would like to give to our audience? And if so, what would that be?
If I had one message, it would be that there's a lot of hope and help out there. and not everything is bad. We have a lot of amazing stuff happening in schools every day, but it is incumbent upon us to think about how we're going to prepare, how we're going to plan, and how we're going to respond to these critical events, not only as a school, but as a community. So our schools need to be amazing partners with our first responders. And our partners need to be amazing in terms of partnership with our schools. And I tell our law enforcement people all the time, if you don't have good relationships with your schools, you fix it. You fix it today. And schools, if you don't have good relationships with your firefighters and your cops, you fix it and you fix it today, because tomorrow is too late. And the opportunity to build those programs and solutions, have those tough conversations today, train the kids properly, have open, honest conversations with students and staff alike. And doing that as a community, you have such a much better opportunity for win. And that's the success.
So valuable there. Just having that relationship seems like it would open the door to, maybe you should do this at your school. Just one little safety way that you could probably help your teachers and your kids, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. I've worked with schools where the PTA will work with the school, and they'll create like a little break room for cops to come in and write their reports, or, you know, come in and get a snack or a soft drink. They'll have cops come in and have lunch with the kids. This is the opportunity at a time when all these bridges are being broken and around the country, to build up the bridge of community, and cops and kids talk to each other and build trust and open dialogue, and kids get to ask great questions and cops have to answer great questions. That's community. And I think the stronger the community, the stronger the foundation for safety can be, and that's a win.
That is such a great idea. Do you see many police substations, maybe out of schools? Do you see that?
I tell you, one of the things that I love seeing is when I go to one of our schools in my district in Colorado, the PTA moms will bake cookies or brownies, and they invite the cops to come in and have cookies. It's like, you know, you see cop cars rotating around the parking lot, just stopping to get cookies and get a soft drink, come in, say hi to the kids, and read to the kindergartners, or play a little football with the, you know, fifth graders or the middle schoolers or whatever. And every time I walk into a school and I see that, I'm just like thrilled. It's like the greatest day ever, because I know the good stuff's happening. And I know when somewhere along the line, a student knows something, or they've heard something, they're going to say, I can talk to that person. I can talk to that person in uniform, and they're going to listen to me. We have a relationship. I've seen the wins time and time again. In fact, I can just share an anecdote from my own district. When I first started, 68% of our kids said they felt safe in schools. After we implemented all of these programs for all of these years, 92% of our kids say they feel safe in schools. So we still have 8% to go, but getting 92% of kids to agree on anything is pretty, pretty incredible. So it can be done. And one of the things that I've seen in Missouri, just in the short time that I've been coming back and forth here over the last several months, is there is such a power in the communities in this state that I haven't seen in years anywhere else. And I love that, because there's something to be said about fire departments that paint their fire trucks the color of the high school mascot, or police officers playing football with the kids at recess, or, you know, the involvement of parents showing up to sporting events on Friday nights. That's a big deal. And I think that sense of community is probably the baseline for everything good that can happen. But it doesn't mean we can't and shouldn't be prepared for what could be coming. It means we have to be even more prepared, just because if you want to continue that strength of community in the aftermath of whatever crisis you're gonna deal with, whether it's an active attack or whether it's a tornado or something else, have those structures in place now, so you're not trying to figure out later, because later doesn't work.
All right, so parents, PTA, so on and so forth, the cookies, the brownies, and wait for it, the donuts go a long way with the sense
you gotta,
of community.
You got to be all in.
I had to throw that in.
Get all in.
That's John McDonald, the future Chief Operating Officer of the Council for School Safety Leadership. It's a national school safety organization that will launch soon in Missouri. We will be back with more after this. This is Show Me Today, the voice of Missouri.